Welcome back to the Sports Ticket on this Wednesday, April the 7th. Time to talk Royals baseball with the voice of the Kansas City Royals, Ryan LaFever. And Ryan is with us on the line right now. And Ryan, a pretty good start to the season for the Royals. Good to hear your voice again on TV and on the radio, and good to have baseball back, and good to have some fans in the stands as well.
Amen to all that, Wade, and good to hear your voice. I think the one that I appreciate the most is the crowd. And I don't know how 9,000 can sound like 20 or 30,000, but they've pulled it off at Kauffman Stadium. And to have that win on opening day and just hear the crowd reacting to it was the best.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And hopefully at some point we'll have a packed house again, and I think we will down the line. What about the makeup of this team? Off to a nice 3-1 start. Lots of offense the first couple of games, starting pitching not very good until Danny Duffy's gym the other day in Cleveland. What about the makeup of this team and how it's been constructed by Dayton Moore with the acquisitions he made in the offseason?
Yeah, it's only four games, but I think it's symbolic of what it's going to be like for this team. I think we were all expecting that the offense was going to be a lot better, and we've seen that. My biggest concern going into the regular season was the starting rotation. I think that the ability is there, but you just have a lot of guys who are either in roles that they haven't been, or maybe they've scuffled in previous years. I mean, I think Brad Keller is going to be fine. He's an excellent pitcher. I think he has a chance to be number one or number two on a good team. We'll just see how he handles that role. And the teams that he's been on in the past weren't very good. So there was pressure that he would put on himself as a professional, but there wasn't a lot of outside pressure of being the guy. So we'll see how he handles that. Mike Minor was a bit shaky last year, but he was an all-star 2 years ago. So I think, you know, he's a guy that can be steady in that rotation, but they're counting on him in a tough spot. Number two, Brady Singer. What's the league going to do to adjust to Brady Singer? I think he's good enough to handle any adjustment, but he's no secret this year. There's a lot more information on him, and he's another guy that I think you have to worry about putting too much pressure on himself. And then Danny Duffy's a free agent after spending his whole career with the Royals. What's going to happen there? And we don't know about who the fifth starter is going to be. So there's upside and there's concern with everybody in the rotation, but that's played itself out in the first four games and was my area of concern from the beginning.
Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, with us today on the Sports Ticket. You know, the bullpen is interesting. A lot of power arms down there. And you said that the biggest concern you had was starting pitching. Do you feel pretty good about the bullpen and how it's been constructed?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a really good combination of youth and veterans. And I like the veterans that are in there because they're going to really help the young guys. And every good closer that we've had for a long stretch of time, they always seem to go back and talk about a veteran or two that showed them the ropes when they were new to the bullpen. So we've got guys that can grab the torch and carry it for a while after this year, but maybe they're not there yet, but they're not going to have to figure it out on their own. They've got guys like Greg Holland and Wade Davis that have been doing this for a long time and will be able to guide them.
With the acquisitions that Dayton Moore made during the offseason, the one I find pretty intriguing, well, first of all, Michael A. Taylor's off to a great start. But the Alberto guy from Baltimore, I mean, I'm learning more and more about him, and I love his energy and his infectious smile, and he stepped in place of Dozier, done a nice job. And we know sometimes everybody talks about the big acquisitions or, you know, hey, you know, we got Benintendi in a trade. Well, that's one that grabs people's attention even across the country. But sometimes it's the moves under the radar that can be the difference between making you a contender or maybe putting you over the top.
Yeah, and then you get Hunter Dozier hurting his tongue in the very first game, and you got someone like Alberto that you can run in there right away. You know, there's going to be no drop-off defensively. There might be some drop-off offensively as far as power goes. But you're right. When a team has an unexpectedly good year, you're going to have players who had unexpectedly good years. And as fate would have it, we began the season with the Rangers, and that was his original organization, and they loved him. They loved all the things that you just said about him, but they never thought he was going to hit. They always thought he was just going to be a nice utility infielder who might be able to get a bunt down for you or execute a hit and run, but was never going to be much offensively. So he goes on to Baltimore and had a couple of nice years for them, but they're rebuilding and not ready to spend money. And so now you got a guy who proves himself in the major leagues, but he's arbitration eligible, and so he gets non-tendered. So the Royals, you know, Dayton Moore in particular, and doing the weekly show with him on Sunday, you know, he said something that stuck with me. He said he trusted us with the minor league contract because, you know, it's a leap of faith to go in there and you don't have anything guaranteed. The team can say, hey, we have some roster issues right now, but we think you're going to make the club, but it's going to start off as a minor league contract, but you have an excellent chance of being on this roster. I mean, you need the player to trust you there, and he did, and he made the club, and hopefully he has a good year. But, yeah, I saw him perform well in Baltimore a couple of years ago, but I didn't make a whole lot of it. But when the Royals signed him, I could just feel a buzz that they felt really fortunate to get him, and especially to get him on a minor league deal.
You mentioned the offense, and it's off to an outstanding start. Lots of runs the first couple of games, and Mondesi's not even healthy right now. And, of course, if he hits like he did the last part of the COVID-19 shortened season a year ago, he adds so much to this offense. So when you look at the lineup, and, of course, Witt's off to a fantastic start, doesn't it seem like maybe the most complete lineup the Royals have had in a while?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. And as you pointed out, when you put Mondesi in there and his combination of power and speed, and you can put him just about anywhere in the lineup. And I like the top three in the lineup the way it stands right now, because you've got guys who can just wear out a starting pitcher in the first inning. And that's always been the strategy against starters, and especially good starters, is if you're going to get them, you better get them early, because it takes them a while to get going. Some guys come right out of the gate, and they're strike one, strike two, strike three, and they've got their A game as soon as they step through the gate in the bullpen. But a lot of guys, it takes them an inning or so to really settle in. And when you have someone who can work the count like Witt, Benintendi, and Santana, I mean, you can really give a guy fits right off the bat, and it can affect the rest of his day. You know, he's kind of so-called playing from behind the rest of the day. And so I really like that top of the order. I think when Mondesi comes back, they would like to put him in there somewhere, but that's another guy who just scares you to death because he can bunt and he can also hit one into the fountains. So when you can have a lineup, and this was a lineup at the end of spring training, not now, but at the end of spring training before Mondesi got hurt, but I think when you have a lineup where you've got Hunter Dozier and Jorge Soler hitting sixth and seventh, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, with us today on the Sports Ticket. For those that aren't too familiar with Andrew Benintendi, who the Royals traded for, a 26-year-old outfielder with the Red Sox, just explain what the Royals expect out of him and what they had in mind when they made that move to bring him into the organization.
Well, I remember when I clicked on the internet a few months ago, and it was probably longer than that, but there was a story, and I didn't know if it was speculation or not, but it said the Red Sox are open to dealing Benintendi. And I thought, oh, that's kind of a surprise. I mean, he's a young guy, helped them win a World Series, and he's had a couple of down years, but he also had a couple of big years. He's been a high-profile guy his whole life. I mean, he was the high school player of the year senior year growing up in the Cincinnati area. He goes to Arkansas, and he won both of the major college player of the year award, Golden Spikes and the Dick Houser Awards. And then he's a first-round pick of the Red Sox. Then he gets to the big leagues quickly, and he finishes second for American League Rookie of the Year. I mean, this guy's been high-profile going all the way back to high school, and he's delivered for the most part. He's a very good defender. I wouldn't put him in the same class as Alex Gordon, but it's not a big drop-off. He has a beautiful swing, and the kind of swing that you look at and you think, okay, that's probably long slump-proof, if you will, because there are a lot of really good hitters that you just watch them swinging up, and you're thinking, well, they're getting hits right now, but we like to say there are holes in that swing, that if they're pitched right, I mean, you can get them out. And he, I mean, he's young. I mean, he's got a chance to improve. And I remember my phone beeping and looking down at the alert and saying the Royals are close to a deal for Andrew Benintendi. And I just don't remember us making trades like that.
Right.
So, and he's a Midwest guy, and I certainly wouldn't put words into his mouth, but, you know, he's from Cincinnati, and I think he might, there's a chance he might feel more at home in Kansas City than he would in Boston. And so, and he's surrounded by a lot of really good players now, so, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of pressure on him. But I think the thing I was most impressed listening to his press conference after the trade was made was that he recognized that he tried to get caught up in lifting the ball because that's the way the game was going, and launch angle and maybe hitting more home runs, but it didn't work for him. And he's trying to go back to his old swing. And if you've heard us on the telecast, if there's something that I notice quite a bit, and I'll point it out, maybe too much, but there are so many players in the game today that did the same thing. They got caught up in home runs and launch angles, and it wrecked their career. I mean, it took them away from who they are, and all of their other numbers suffered. And then the next thing you know, they're either out of the game or they're just not what they could have been. Just literally changed the trajectory of their swing and their career. The fact that he was able to reel that back in a short period of time, and Kauffman Stadium is just perfect for his swing.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. And then, so he's the left fielder for the Royals, then replacing Alex Gordon. And in center, you got Michael A. Taylor, which when I watched the broadcast, in the highlights as well, what stands out when you announce him is you always mention the middle initial with him, which is, it stands out to me, Michael A. Taylor. And you've been mentioning him quite a bit because he's off to a great start at the plate. And this is a guy that we know, and he's had speed. He's really good defensively, but questions have been about his bat, and he's off to a great start in center for the Royals.
Yeah, he's another guy. I mean, he recognized that, you know, he probably got caught up in trying to hit home runs in Washington as well, and his strikeouts spiked. And a guy of his style should not have a lot of strikeouts. He needs to put the ball in play and use his legs. He's a tremendous defensive outfielder. He's as good, if not better, than Lorenzo Cain, I think, from a range standpoint. And obviously he has the arm. He threw out two guys in the first three innings on opening day. But, you know, he hasn't played a lot. He played in just over 30 games last year with the Nationals, and he played, I think, in fewer than 60 games the year before that. So that gives a player a long time to sit back and reflect. He seems to be a very deep thinker when he does interviews. He just seems very calm, and his answers are very thorough. I haven't heard one cliche come out of his mouth yet, but like Benintendi, he's had a time to really look at his career. He's older than Benintendi, but just kind of look back and say, okay, you know, I've got an opportunity here with a new team to recreate myself. And what he's doing at the plate, similar to Benintendi, I mean, if he has this swing, I mean, that's just those kind of swings, unless a guy is just in some sort of a mental fog, those kind of swings avoid long slumps. When it's a short swing, they're using the middle of the field and they're going to the opposite field. And it's also so important too, Wade, as we're talking about Benintendi and we're talking about Michael A. Taylor and you know, Carlos Santana, Hanser Alberto. It's so important when players go to new teams that they play well right away. And it's only four games, but there's just a pressure that is released when you go to a new team and you feel like you're part of the team and the crowd is embracing you. And all those guys have done something in the first four games. And so, gosh, for Michael A. Taylor to do what he did just in the first game alone, it has to reinforce that the changes he's trying to make are working. And as far as Michael A. Taylor goes, we used to, the A is after his father, Anthony, and that's his way of honoring his father. But there was another player named Michael Taylor as well. He played for the A's and other teams, but he was the guy, if you remember years ago, we were in Oakland, and that Michael Taylor hit a line drive to right. Jeff Francoeur played it on a bounce and threw him out at first base from right field.
Yeah.
And he was mad. He was yelling at Francoeur. It was the last out of the inning. He was yelling at Francoeur, you know, for showing him up and making him look bad. And so we used to say, you know, that maybe this Taylor put the A in there just so everyone would know that he wasn't that Taylor.
Yeah, right, right. I do remember that now that you bring that up. Absolutely. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. A couple more before we let you go, Ryan. What are the expectations for this team this year? You know, there, I won't say there's a disconnect, because, but there is somewhat. When you weren't able to go to the games last year and it was a shortened season, yes, it was a season, but it wasn't a normal season. Now we're hopefully getting closer to normalcy, whatever that means in today's era and age. But what are the expectations for Royals fans that are listening right now? What should we expect? It's a good start, but it's a long season. You know how it is. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Well, let's pretend we're having this interview a year ago, and here's how I would have answered it. Here's how I did answer it when I was asked that question. The team that won the World Series, they all started to come to the big leagues at different times in 2011. And for the most part, their first full season in the big leagues was 2012, and they lost 90 games. Ned Yost would say over and over again that for a team to become competitive in the big leagues, it took about 2.5 years for them. If that the talent was there and the mental strength was there, it took about 2.5 years for a team to be competitive in the major leagues. Well, in 2013, and when that season was over, you're basically talking about 2.5 years. They were 10 games above 500. They go to the World Series in 14, and they win the World Series in 15. So I just use that as a model. Now, the group we have now, and this was before all of the changes this year, but the group we had going into last season started to trickle up to the big leagues at different times in 18. Their first full season was 19. They lost over 100 games. And so, for me, I was thinking 2020 is the year. That's the pivotal year where, are they going to be 10 games above 500? Are they going to go to the World Series? Maybe not, but at least they need to start winning more games than they're losing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we have an abbreviated season in 2020, and so my answer was, well, let's see what happens in 2021, because, you know, 2020 was such a strange year. But it was a strange year for everybody. I mean, everybody had a 60-game season. And we point to all the minor leaguers who didn't get to play, and the guys that were at the alternate site, they didn't get to play real games. Well, that was the same for all 30 teams. So the Royals are, we get so focused sometimes in our own world that
yes,
we forget the same thing happened for the last, or for the other 29 teams.
Right.
So my feeling this year is my feeling that I had last year. They have to start winning more games than they lose. And so I don't think it's an unfair expectation at all for them to have a season above 500 and have a contending season in the division. I mean, there are good teams in the division. There are also question marks in the division. Minnesota has proven that they're the class of the Central Division, but you've got guys that are getting up there in age. I mean, Josh Donaldson's already broken down his hamstring, and they've made some additions that on paper should make them better. We'll see. Chicago had a really good year last year. They faded a bit at the end, but they took a big jump forward.
Mm-hmm.
Denny Matthews has a theory that is right more times than it isn't, in that when a team or a player takes a big jump forward, you know, when they leap two or three levels forward instead of just one, you can expect them to fall back.
Yep.
At least one level the next year. And then the year after that is when you really have to look out. And so I think that's very possible for the White Sox. They're a team that plays with a lot of emotion, and that can be a good thing, and that can also work against a team being successful. I think Tony La Russa was a good addition for them, because I think he'll be a good steadying force for that. Detroit's rebuilding, and Cleveland is. Cleveland's always going to be better than they should be because of their manager, Terry Francona. So there are good teams, but there are a lot of question marks, and I think the Royals should be right in that mix.
No, I agree with you totally. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, with us today on the Sports Ticket. So today's game, first pitch coming up in a little while, 12:10 there in Cleveland. The Royals and the Cleveland baseball team. I don't know how they're going with all this now, but anyway, Cleveland and Kansas City, and the Royals off to the 3-1 start. Danny Duffy, 6-inning scoreless last time out. Royals won 3-0. Witt with a 2-run homer against the AL Cy Young Award winner from last season, Shane Bieber, and Jacob Junis will go to the hill for the boys in blue. What are you expecting to see today? And then Junis, of course, is an intriguing guy, I think, for the Royals' bullpen, if that's where he's going to be all year long. Maybe be a spot starter. We've seen certainly some flashes of brilliance for him, and I know he's tried to expand his repertoire as well with a cutter, I believe.
With a cutter and an improved changeup, and he worked with his younger brother, Noah, who very interesting story. He's kind of turned himself into this kind of pitching from a mechanical and analytic standpoint guru. And so they worked together in the offseason. And the Royals had also been wanting Junis to think about adding a cutter. And, you know, they just look at a guy's release point and they look at his mechanics and whatever. And you know, a curveball is not for everybody. A slider is not for everybody. A splitter is not for everybody. But some guys just have the physical makeup where, you know, hey, you might want to try this pitch. And for Junis, it's the cutter, which looked good in spring training. It's looked good in the regular season. I've always felt like on a good team, he would be a perfect reliever because he can give you one inning, he can give you two innings. That slider is really going to play if he's only facing the lineup one time. But in his mind, he wants to be a starter, and good for him. I mean, he continued to improve himself or try to improve himself during the offseason so that he'll get a chance to, you know, to be a starter, and he'll get a chance today. And for Bieber, you know, he's a strikeout guy. And those two teams in 14 and 15 offensively didn't put up astronomical World Series team-type numbers, even though they got there. But one thing that they did, which was better than anybody else, is they avoided the strikeout, and they put the ball in play, and they put pressure on the defense. And they took a lot of pitchers that would get into 1-2 or 0-2 counts who were just able to go to the strikeout naturally. I mean, they could just will themselves to get a strikeout. And the Royals just took that away from certain pitchers. They could really neutralize a really good strikeout pitcher. And so that's how you beat guys like Shane Bieber. You don't necessarily go, oh, we're going to go score 7 runs. We're going to hit a couple of 3-run home runs and blah, blah, blah. That's not usually how you beat them. I mean, every now and then Shane Bieber's just going to have a bad day, but you can't count on it. But if you can take the strikeout away from a strikeout pitcher, that's how you beat him.
Time for the off-the-wall question. It's been a while since I've had a chance to ask you this, Ryan, in regards to an off-the-wall question. It's good to hear your voice again, as it's great to have baseball back and fans in the stands, as we established at the beginning of the interview. So I'm going to ask you this, and luckily you're not a hockey play-by-play announcer, but, you know, we are both in the broadcasting industry, call play-by-play of different sporting events, and I know there are times when I'm preparing for a game, there is a name that might trip me up a little bit, and I really have to practice that name phonetically more so than any other. So the off-the-ball question, what's the toughest name that you've ever had to pronounce on the air or that you were a little bit apprehensive or nervous about and had to spend extra time on?
Oh, man. Gosh. I can't think of one off the bat. Mm-hmm. That's a terrible beginning to your off-the-wall question. you know, I tell you what, I've been blessed, if that's what you want to call it, that I can look at a name and I can figure out the phonetics of it pretty quickly, and I usually don't struggle with it. And if I've been saying it wrong and someone corrects me, I can make that change, and I don't fall back, you know, on how I originally called that player. And I'll say this, I'm sure you've seen the same, but there are a lot of announcers that when I look at their scorecard, I might drop by their booth before the game and say, you know, how's it going? And how's this guy playing? Or, you know, we'll just trade information on our teams and I'll look at their scorecard and they'll have the player's name spelled phonetically.
Yes.
On their scorecard, just because they don't want to mess it up.
Yep.
And I've never really done that. And I don't say that to brag, but I can train myself pretty good that if I figure out, the phonetics of it, I can go with it. And maybe it's just from having a crazy name like LeFevre and the way that it's spelled. Not that I have an appreciation for taking an odd name and being able to spell it correctly.
Well, that's funny you say that, because it took me a long time to finally spell your name without having to look it up. I mean, kid you not, I can pronounce it, but I don't know how many times I would always get messed up on a couple of the letters, and now I feel confident when I type it to promote that you're going to be on the show. I don't have to look it up anymore, but it took me a little bit of time.
It's that B.
Yes.
It's that dreaded B just throws everybody off. People will put that B everywhere.
Yes.
I think, well, why would you put it there? I mean, yes. I know it doesn't belong anywhere in my name, but why would you put it there? And I tell you, there is an advantage of having a name like that, especially in this age of telemarketers. Because when I get a phone call and someone says, "Can I speak to Ryan LeFevre?"
Yes.
And I go, yep. I don't know this person.
Yep.
So I usually say something like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, he's not here right now." And if they press me, I've been told that the two things that will get people to lay off is to tell them either he's deceased,
yep,
or he's in prison.
Yeah.
So those are usually two that I go through to make sure that company doesn't call me back.
I've dealt with that as well, where they mispronounce my name, and I always would say, "I'm sorry, nobody by that name lives here," because they don't. You totally butchered my name. So
that's funny. Yeah. There is nobody by that. That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll throw that one.
Mix that into the repertoire, right?
I will.
Hey, man, it is great to talk to you again. Best wishes to you and the Royals and to your family. And I'm hoping everything's been pretty smooth for you guys health-wise through everything since we last spoke with you. And we look forward to – I know I can't wait to get to the ballpark myself selfishly and go spend the money on whatever it is. And just kick back, relax, and watch a game in person. I've been chomping at the bit. I've got baseball fever. I got spring fever, like a lot of people do probably in this country. And I can't wait to be there and cheer on the boys in blue. And appreciate all of the great coverage you provide and painting that picture for us, whether it be on the radio or explaining things on TV for those of us that haven't been able to go to a game for a while.
Well, thank you, Wade. I appreciate that, and I'm looking forward to you being here too. Let me know when you're here at Kauffman Stadium so we can see each other in person.
That sounds great. Ryan LeFevre, one of the best in the business. He's the voice of the Royals, our guest today on the Sports Ticket.